Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Autism Stories. I'm your host, Doug Bletcher, the founder of Autism Personal Coach. Autistic people are the true experts of the autistic experience, and Autism Stories is where we interview autistic people to learn from their stories, experiences, and get their insights. If you would like to be notified about each week's episode of Autism Stories, we suggest you subscribe on your favorite podcast listening platform. We would also appreciate it if you could give us a positive rating and review, as it will help others to learn about Autism Stories. On today's episode, Drew Adamick joins us to discuss being a financial planner and his podcast, Divergent Finances. We hope you enjoy today's conversation. Drew, thanks so much for joining me here today on Autism Stories.
Thank you. Great to be here, Doug.
I'd love to start off by learning, where does your story in the autistic community begin?
So it's been interesting as well, too, because I was first diagnosed back in well over 20 years ago. The story how it came about was I was in grade 7 and I got suspended twice in 1 year for various different types of behavior that necessitated going into counseling services. And that was eventually, though, I got found out when I first got my initial diagnosis around 2001. And then it was reconfirmed a few years later as well, too, there. So that kind of starts to do it. So the initial diagnosis was back, it was originally the Asperger syndrome. So, but of course, as we all know, that all this, it's all part of the big autism family now. So, but that's kind of where my story kind of begins at this point in terms of like diagnosis and stuff like that. I think it's just been kind of a step since then, since school and that kind of stuff going to that, I found going through high school quite challenging, not just as an autistic individual, but then also dealing with queer-related stuff as well, too. They're kind of being neuroqueer as well, so that kind of all those challenges. University was such a different experience as well, too. There, in fact, I was in my element back in my university days as well, too. There, and then it's just been, you know, then graduating from university and then trying to make sense of my career, and taking me well over 10 years to kind of get where I am today. So that's kind of dealing with all the challenges as they present themselves, and being an autistic adult trying to navigate and being a self-advocate, because we all know how challenging that can be as well. So
was looking back on it, being suspended, a great moment for you in your life leading to learning about your autism?
It was great to learn a little bit about being on the autism spectrum. It sucks being suspended, because it was just like, who likes getting into trouble, right? So,
yeah, absolutely. Now, you have a bachelor's degree in political science, but ended up becoming a financial planner. What is it about financial planning that's led you to do this work for over a decade now?
So an interesting story at this point, too. So during my third year of university, I did something quite crazy, and I ran for parliament in my hometown back in Canada as well, too. There, didn't get very far. I ran in north central BC. I got a distant third place, but it was a very interesting experience. One of my fellow candidates in that election, who was in the same party as I am at the time, was a longtime financial planner and retirement planning expert in Canada called, his name is Garth Turner. Used to be a former federal cabinet minister as well, too, there, and has published many books as well, too, there. And he has a very prolific blog as well, too, that was been on my reading list for a time. And, you know, we had a bit of email back and forth to 2008 during the election. But then following through reading his blog, you know, later on, kind of led me to think maybe I should take a look at financial planning and wealth management as a career option. And this was kind of around 2012, 2013. I ended up in the financial industry. It kind of came as a little bit by accident to a degree, because initially I was looking at going back to school to doing a master's program. But while I was waiting for the university I was applying to approve my application, I ended up getting a job with one of Canada's largest banks. initially it was just part-time, but eventually led into a permanent full-time position. And I haven't really looked back since at this point. That was 2013 that I started there. So it's been, apart from a brief time where I ended up moving to food and beverage management for a bit to get some management experience, I've been in the financial industry pretty consistently since 2013. So I think it just happened. And I think part of it's just wanting to help people. Financial literacy and financial education is so not present, regardless of stuff. That's one of the things that's sorely lacking in this day and age as well, too. And just that's something that's always been, to me, it's vitally important for neurodivergent folks to know about taking control of their personal financial picture as well, so that they can, you know, leverage what they can to the best of their ability, because as we all know, life's not getting any cheaper. So we got to do what we can to go through there. So that's kind of partly, it's just wanting to give back and kind of make a difference in people's lives. So that's kind of what led me to that, to kind of the financial planning industry.
So whenever I'm focusing on one aspect of my life, I try to like think about how it might impact the other parts of my life, you know, so taking a holistic approach is really whenever possible is really important to me. So, which made it interesting for me to read that you're a holistic financial planner. What exactly does holistic financial planning mean to you?
Breaking down silos and barriers and looking at an overall picture. One of the challenges in the financial planning field is the different aspects of a financial plan. So there are six key elements of a financial plan. That's the first of it is your budget, your cash flow. The next is planning for your retirement, or retirement looks so different for people. Sometimes I call it future income planning because, you know, for some people, retirement means, oh, I'm just going to switch to doing this job and not quitting work entirely. Because I know some people, they retire, they just get so bored. It's like, I need something to do. Then there's insurance and risk management. Then there's tax planning. And then there's estate planning. The challenge with those six areas is because of the way the financial and the various industries are regulated, there's often these silos as well, too, there, especially when it comes to taxes, because ideally an accountant or a certified professional should be giving you tax advice. Same thing when it comes to an estate planning for drafting up a will and your power of attorney and that kind of stuff, too. Lawyers or, you know, lawyers are the ones that have to draft those up as well, too. They're, to do investments, you have to be licensed to do that. And if they're not, then they're obviously, you've got other issues to worry about, to say the least. Same thing too with insurance. It's just there's all these silos that these areas kind of into it. So a good holistic planner is about breaking down those silos as much as we can. We obviously can't do them all because of regulations and stuff, but it's about coordinating and working together within those as much as possible, factoring in all of those key areas and kind of looking at the big picture. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, you want to leverage your money to make it work for you. And that means going across all of these other barriers, because there's, you know, all of these other silos and all these other key components. While they form good components, they can't work in isolation. They have to be coordinated. And that's kind of where a good financial planner is that coordinator. We are that, to borrow the football terminology, we are the main quarterback for that, to make sure that the ball gets to where it's supposed to go.
As part of your financial planning practice, you offer LGBTQAI2S+ and neurodivergent community engagement and outreach. So what suggestions may you have for other financial planners in supporting clients from one or both of those communities?
There's a lot of crossover, but let's start with the queer community at this point as well, too, there, just to keep it simple and straightforward here. Part of it's just being understanding of a lot of the challenges that queer folks face at this point. For example, I was on a call with a couple of other planners in the industry as well, too, there. And one of the things that came about is often the challenges that people have, like, that are in the queer community. So traditional means of saving for finances might not make sense because, for example, think, oh, if your cost of living is so expensive, why don't you move to a more affordable location? Not realizing that many queer folks often go to more expensive places to live out of safety because they're often in larger urban areas. You know, for example, in Canada, typically that's Toronto, Vancouver, and Montreal to a degree. And Toronto and Vancouver in Canada are hugely, they're so expensive to live in. But people in the queer community often think that that is a sacrifice worth it because of being in a community close by with others like them and having access to those resources, which in smaller cities or in small towns may not be there. And even in smaller communities are downright outright hostile as well. So it just depends on understanding why people are in specific circumstances and why the what might appear to be the logical perspective of, oh, you know, maybe look at ordinating to a location that's within your budget. Well, that may not work for other reasons as well. And then for the neurodivergent community as well, it's just simply a matter of just being understanding, but also realizing that not everyone is necessarily kind of on that same kind of wavelength at this point. I know for a lot of people, I know it's been, frankly, it's been huge over the past since the pandemic of virtual meetings. A little to there, I can't tell you how much that's been such a game changer, because being able to meet with people when and where that's most comfortable for them is often a lot easier for people that, you know, they're too afraid to go out or they don't want to pick up the phone, because for many people, phone calls are just use up so much spoons, a little to the, or they don't even want to go into like a bank branch or an office because it's can be intimidating or just can be budgeting, or they don't have a car or just part, you know, even that, you know, that kind of thing. So it's providing flexible opportunities for meeting people where they are, but also just basically realizing that everyone takes their approaches differently for finances and stuff. Unfortunately, in the industry, we do have to make a lot of assumptions, and it's partly because dealing with all the liability and stuff like that, because of some people have been burnt so badly in the past, we have to say certain things to people, even if it just goes in one ear and out the other and it's Greek to them or just it's like a foreign language to them. But we still have to say and disclose these things because we have to demonstrate to our regulators that we've gone through a lot of things, even though it's just sometimes we have to translate it from English to English and sometimes even make it even more English, if you know what I mean.
You're currently helping Canadian first-time homebuyers to successfully plan for homeownership. So what are some things for people to consider if buying a home is a good financial decision for them or not?
Well, it all depends on one's individual circumstances. It all depends on where things fit into it. One of the things that I do consider that kind of sets me apart from other planners is most people do tend to think of real estate as an asset class. First and foremost, I'm not that type of planner, but then again, this is my personal bias at play here. But at the same time, too, if you're buying your first home, you're obviously planning to live into it. First and foremost, it's meant to be shelter. But you also have to look at the costs associated with home ownership and figure that out vis-a-vis renting. Again, it all depends on the community that you're living in or where you like to live in. So it depends on what your down payment's going to, that needs to be as well too, but also things like, okay, what are your costs associated with it? So what's the mortgage payments going to be here? What are the property tax payments are going to be like as well too there? What are your utility bills or costs are going to be here? If you're going to be buying a condo, what condo fees are you going to have to pay on top of that? What are some of the full all-in costs? Because most people just seem to think of, oh, we'll just take care of the mortgage payment. Well, no, you got to factor in all those other things like utilities, property taxes, and property taxes are not going down. In Canada, anyways, they're always going up because that's the only way in Canada that many local governments have to raise revenue for local services to pay for your roads, your garbage collection, etc. So it's about looking at those costs and then determining it vis-a-vis renting as to what makes sense the most for you. Now, for sometimes people have traditionally looking for home ownership because, again, what people are looking for is security of tenure. They want to be able to live in a place here and not have to worry about getting evicted because, let's say, for example, your place is, you know, you've had a low rent for a while, but, you know, a landlord wants to raise their rent, and, you know, they can only do it so much. So they do rent, you know, if you might have heard of the term rent eviction, especially if you've in the greater Vancouver area, that's a bit of an infamous term where people ostensibly say they're doing renovations, but it's in reality, it's basically as a means to kind of increase the price of rent. Because again, we've had such cheap money for a long time. People are looking to, you know, from a cost benefit perspective, they're trying to maximize their rent. So whether or not you believe in, you know, whether or not you believe that's a good thing or not as well too, there is, you know, that's your own opinion. But again, people are wanting to raise costs because again, if they're into it to make money, that's how they're going to do it. So you got to factor in what's for your individual circumstance, what's the easiest thing to do, what makes the most sense now versus what's going to make most sense later here. But also going to depends on where you are in your career. If your career is going to take you around locations, you're going to be moving quite a bit, buying may not necessarily make sense because you want the flexibility of being able to, you know, hand in a lease and not have to worry about closing costs and all that other stuff or maintaining a property, because for every buyer, there has to be a seller. And, you know, and vice versa as well too. So you got to figure out what's best for you. And in this day and age here in Canada, because we have now where interest rates are back up to pre-2008 levels, we are not used to seeing interest rates like this, which is increasing the cost of borrowing, which is reducing the purchase price that you can make. That's why you now need to determine, okay, but prices are still being sticky. They're still not quite going down there. So does it make sense to jump into home ownership and worth paying that much money into something that's going to, you know, it's all about individual circumstances, right? And of course, it goes back to the saying, all real estate is local. Every market's different. So again, it all comes back to your own individual circumstances.
I'm wondering about, you know, as autistic people, you know, obviously the employment rates are not great. So I'm just wondering, for those that might not have consistent income, like, does a financial planner make sense for them at all? Or do you have other suggestions for them on how to use their money?
Everyone needs a financial plan. But then again, I'm biased as well too. I'm a financial planner. Yeah. But I do think everyone needs a financial plan. And I would say those that have precarious income and or inconsistent income need a plan even more so. And this has been one of the huge challenges in the industry is the people that need advice the most are the ones that can't really afford to traditionally get it.
Right.
One of the things I'm doing to give back as well, in addition to with my own personal practice, I do have every new client that comes see me, I had to do a 30-minute free initial meeting just to see, like, what are you looking to do here? Here's some tips and, you know, what can we do here? And then kind of go from next steps there. But I'm also a member up here in Canada. I'm a member of the one of the professional associations I'm a part of is the Financial Planning Association of Canada. And I'm also involved with that group with their pro bono committee. So I'm one of about a dozen or so financial planners that work to give back through this program to Canadians that are looking for, like, a, you know, 30 to 60 minute consultation. They're just looking for some advice. So how this works essentially is, you apply on the FPAC website. There's a pro bono site. What you're looking to talk with a planner about, and then it's sent to one of the volunteer planners. Then we reach out to that person to say, okay, let's schedule a talk. What do you need help with the most here? So it's a bit more like kind of one-off advice at this point. But again, but it's part of way of making sure that people needing advice the most is able to get it. Because, you know, for example, to maintain my certified financial planning designation, I have to do 25 hours of continuing education credits per year. Sometimes it involves, and of course, I have to then pay an annual licensing fee for my practice, I have insurance and all that stuff. So, you know, we're professionals. We got bills and stuff to pay. But traditionally, people in the industry tend to go after the higher net worth people, those with higher incomes, because those are the ones who can afford to pay for it. But it still perpetuates that, where it's the people that need the planning the most are the ones that can't really afford to pay for it. Or if they do go to places like that, they're oftentimes may not necessarily getting the best advice, because even though, like I said, I've started my career in the banking industry and work with banks and credit unions, and there's lots of great people that work there. Places like that there is a sales culture there. Their job is not necessarily to act in your best interest first and foremost. That person in front has targets to meet. They got a job to do. So whether or not it's in a person's best interest to do that again, up in the air, right? So you got to be cognizant of that at this point. But I think it's vitally important that you need to have a plan in place, especially if your income is inconsistent, because it's all about making sure that you can make your bills, because your income might be inconsistent, but your bills aren't. As, you know, as much as we'd like to have our electricity power bills be like, oh, hey, I can't afford to pay. Can you wait till I get paid? They're like, no, we want to get paid now every month here, please and thank you. Wish the world didn't work that way, but unfortunately, that's how it works. So, but that's why it's important to have that budgeting strategy to make sure that what income that you are getting, that you're able to cover your expenses. The importance of things of having an emergency fund, of having at least 3 to 6 months worth of expenses saved up, should be of the first priority of any successful financial plan, is just in case you do face precarious employment or a job loss or something like that, that you've got some cushion room to help cover you. Because, for example, in Canada, we do have what's called EI, employment insurance, but that may not necessarily cover what you were fully making previously at a previous job, for example. So having that cushion room of savings and stuff kind of helps tide that nest egg. Plus, it also allows someone to, for example, spend some time to actually look at a job that's aligned with them rather than taking the first thing that's available for them because they need a paycheck, right? So, but of course, as I'm sure many of us listing are well aware, it's easier said than done.
I always love talking with other podcasters, and you recently started a podcast, Divergent Finances. What have you learned so far as a result of the podcasting experience?
That I need to look around for a couple different good quality audio editing software and stuff like that. I am leveraging some of my video editing stuff that I learned back in high school. Oh my God, I'm dating myself at this point. The last time it's funny, I was in grade 9 when I took a whole bunch of film editing courses. At this point, I actually took a grade 9, 10, 11, and grade 12 course for film editing in my grade 9 year. I spent into my entire year in some sort of film development class. But that was, oh my God, 2000, when I was ninth grade, that's what, 2003? Yeah, I remember it was around 2003, 2002. I remember that was when Attack of the Clones came out, Star Wars Episode II, and that was the big thing that everyone in the class was really wanting to see for that one year. Using YouTube at this point, just because I think it's because I'm also trying to, hoping to incorporate some shorts and stuff like that, and just keeping it all in one place. I just think it's an easier thing to it. But what I've learned probably as a result of it, this experience, has been just the importance of having consistency a bit, because, you know, people want to have, you know, we want to have consistent stuff. Although I tried to be consistent, but unfortunately, like, I did deviate from my schedule a bit because I wanted to get one episode out before a financial deadline in Canada for people awareness. And then after I did that, I got a cold. So focusing on that, said my voice wasn't the greatest. So it was just, you know, giving time to recuperate. So, but then I'm feeling better now. So then it's then catching. And then I've got like, oh, I should probably catch up. So I was spending some time earlier today just, you know, binge doing a few different episode ideas at this point. And I've tried doing scripts for my podcast, but I tend to come a bit almost robotic when I do a script. I prefer doing the stream of consciousness stuff. I mean, it's just more authentic. Plus, also allows me, I can just go on an info dump tangent on something that comes up in my head. And I always love going off like that, right? So.
And lastly, how can our listeners learn about you and your podcast, Divergent Finances, beyond this interview?
Search on YouTube, Divergent Finances. I'm also under my channel, Divergent Financial Planning. If you want to check out my website, www.divergentfp.ca. You can also email me at info@divergentfp.ca. I am on LinkedIn as well, too. They're both for my business and for myself, available on LinkedIn. I am not on Facebook. I am not on the site formerly known as Twitter. And I probably won't, just because I have a lot of ethical considerations regarding Facebook and regarding Meta's business practices. And don't get me started about the former bird site at this point. But so I try to be strategic in where I am for kind of where I am when it comes to my social media and stuff like that, because again, a lot of times there's so much content out there. It's about being sold. It's about being strategic and finding a fit that works for people. And that's kind of where I think, you know, check me out on YouTube as well too there. But again, if any questions, those are the places where you can find me.
Well, thanks so much, Drew. I'm going to be checking out the Divergent Finances podcast. Really appreciate getting the time to meet you. Thanks so much for joining me here on Autism Stories.
Thank you very much, Doug.
Thanks so much to Drew for the conversation. To learn about Drew, please check out the link in the podcast description for this episode. We always love hearing from you and would especially love to hear from you relating to this episode on what financial obstacles do you feel like you need help with the most, and how do you feel about working with an expert to help you guide you through those challenges? Here at Autism Personal Coach, our clients are the experts, our coaches are the guides. The majority of supports for autistics are not helpful. They try to fix us, not support us. That's why many are confused when we say our clients are the experts, experts of their lived experience. Our clients are the experts for what has worked for them and about the things they need and want in their lives. Our coaches first listen to our clients and then ask thoughtful questions, offer resources, and strategize with our clients so they can get what they need to thrive. Would you want a guide in your life to coach you to help you get the things you desire? If so, then visit autismpersonalcoach.com for more information. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Autism Stories. And if you did, if you could tell a friend, foe, or anyone else you know about it so they could have the same enjoyable and educational experience as you would listening to Autism Stories, it would be very much appreciated. Until next time, I'm Doug Blutcher of Autism Personal Coach. Talk to you then.